This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's Tuesday, time to talk politics, and we are hurtling to the deadline for punishing new tariffs to take effect. That is at midnight tonight, and there's no indication one way or another from Prime Minister Carney or his team, but those in the know say there's also no indication of progress and no reason for the Americans to back off. Now, one good sign is that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has weighed in calling for a deal. But what kind of concessions would it take? We have heard saying, hey, the old world of free trade, don't expect that to come anytime soon. So what kind of concessions would it take? And all of this in the midst of polling that shows that Canadians are not in the mood for concessions. They don't want a deal that would be a cave. But they are still happy with the Prime Minister's performance, even though on a last few files he has granted concessions, big concessions, and then tried to hide them, notably the Gordie Howe Bridge just a few weeks ago. But is that a case where two opposite things can exist at once? And I think here is an indication of the kind of frustration that people are feeling. And that is this online petition calling for the recall of U.S. Ambassador Pete Hoekstra, who's been really disrespectful in his comments about Canada. Well, we talked about it first last week. There were about 30,000 people signing. Now more than 200,000. Though I would say the chances of us acting on that are probably less than zero. Now, the other thing I want to talk about in terms of the by-elections, there are some by-elections on August 31st, is the cost of them and the reasons behind some of them. You know, I've always had an issue with people who run for office without a commitment to serve out their terms. You know, is it just a stopgap until they get a better offer? So let us talk about that. Also at the provincial level, what about the new bail requirements for cash within 2 days? That's already attracted a constitutional challenge, and a late Friday decision telling judges to stay in their lane, which does not include bike lanes. So can the premier do the same? People, the numbers to call, 866-740-4740. That is our long distance line and our text line. Also 416-360-0740.
And now, the Recovering Politicians Panel.
And now I'd like to welcome Bob Richardson, a public affairs consultant, Jerry DeNovo, former NDP MPP, and Lisa Wright, former deputy leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. Hi, everyone. Welcome.
Hi, Libby.
Good afternoon, Libby.
Let us begin with Lisa, because you're on the advisory body. How do you read where things are at right now with just hours to go?
Just hours to go. I will say that yesterday, the way I viewed what was going on was a two-hour meeting with Jameson Greer and Howard Lutnick and Dominic LeBlanc, Janice Charette, and whoever else was in the room, indicates to me that they're getting close to something to put in front of both the president and the prime minister, which is what you want. You want them to have something in front of them to make a decision on. But let's be really clear. It's not like we're negotiating. I know we keep saying we're looking for a deal. The pure goal of today is to get something, an agreement that allows Donald Trump to stop the Section 338 tariffs from locking on tonight at midnight. That's what it comes down to. And the Section 338 tariffs are tariffs on very specific parts of our economy. It's about $30 billion in Canadian dollars of exports across the border, and it's a 50% tariff. And it doesn't matter if that good is compliant with our original trade agreement. It doesn't matter. Usually we get an exemption for that. We don't in this case. So it'll have an instantaneous impact on some small and medium-sized companies. So that's the goal, is to get Donald Trump to agree that he's not going to allow these things to be implemented tonight.
But doesn't that mean that he needs to claim a win? And doesn't that mean concessions? Maybe big ones.
Correct. It is very true. So the things that he identified, or they identified as problematic, was dairy. It was auto parts, because we put a retaliatory tariff on auto parts after they put their original ones on. And the third one is our favorite, booze on the shelves at provincial stores. So they're looking for movement in those three things, and we will see whether or not they were able to come to an agreement. I understand from last Friday, the last time we received a briefing, that the parties were far apart, and hopefully they came closer together. And yesterday's meeting, I think, was positive. I also think the Prime Minister and Mr. Trump speaking last night is an indicator that maybe they're close to some kind of document being put in front of both of them. And remember, Mr. Carney also has to agree that this is a good deal for Canadians. And just like you pointed out, he's got a lot of political problems if he's seen to be giving concessions to somebody that is so disliked by the majority of Canadians.
Yeah, well, Bob, okay, so let's go over these things. Dairy, that is totally a no-go in Quebec, where they are just a few weeks away from an election. That's a no-go. Booze on the shelf, Doug Ford has said that's my lane, and no booze on the shelf. And David Eby in British Columbia has said the same thing. So there's a no-go on that. And these tariffs are aimed at the heart of our economy, small and medium-sized businesses.
Well, look, just in terms of the negotiations, I think there's probably about a 25% chance we'll get an agreement by the deadline. I think there's probably a 50% chance that there'll be an extension of the deadline in some way or other. And probably about a 25% chance that it goes south. He imposes tariffs, and then there's a Canadian response. So those are the three things that could happen. I tend to think there'll be an extension. It's in his interest, and it's in our interest. He's in the middle of U.S. midterm elections. He's got the U.S. business community that's not supportive of his actions. He's got members of the House of Representatives trying to get reelected in a very tough environment, and in the Senate, and some important Senate seats too as well. And quite frankly, Canada rates, I think it is plus 61 in the most recent favorability ratings for U.S. politics, and Trump's in the dumpster. So you know, he's taking on somebody who's also very positive. So for those reasons, I suspect, the puck will get ragged a bit here, and it will go on for another 30 or 40 days. But who knows? I have confidence too in our team that's doing this. I think Dominic LeBlanc is a very seasoned politician. Madame Charette, also a very seasoned, good public service servant. I think he's got the right people on his staff and the right people in place to be doing this. They're doing the best that they can. And I think we're just going to have to sit back and see where this one rolls.
I hope you're right, Bob, that it's not wishful thinking, but there are a lot of other indications that
it's partially wishful thinking.
Okay, it's at least partially wishful thinking. We're frankly not as important to the Americans as they are to us. There's no question about that. And they clearly don't really respect us. So you know, I think that a lot of people, Sherry, have been kind of ignoring this, putting their head in the sand, and we'll wait to see what happens. And in terms of the midterms, I mean, the Democrats are no better when it comes to protectionism and trade. You know, we have the newly the Michigan the guy who won the primary. He's called NAFTA and our trade agreements a cancer on the economy, Sherry.
Yeah, well, him notwithstanding, I mean, I think politically, I hope Bob's right, too. I suspect there will be an extension on this. I think the by-election's coming up. I think for Carney, the stakes cannot be higher here. Even though they're riding high, even though it's a honeymoon, I mean, he's seen the polling. Canadians don't want to give anything up. That's the basic, you know, stance here. But also in these three by-elections, I think the Liberals are on really thin ice in two of these, certainly in two of these seats. And you know, and Derry in Quebec, that would be a game changer too. So, I mean, people are very nervous, and you've got some, a good kind of bellwether of voters' remorse here with these three by-elections. My suspicion is that the Liberals will lose two of them, and that Quebec could even be in play if Derry is not absolutely protected. So, I mean, I think that for Canadians is kind of interesting politically for our political panel. So that will be interesting. But I think the best he can get is an extension. If he doesn't get that, I fear. Now, the booze, I think, is the least. I mean, Canadians have said we're not going to buy it, even if it is on the shelves.
Well, so we'll that. See about that.
You know. There's that. I mean, we may miss our bourbon, but I mean, I think, you know, we'll forgo. So I think it'll be interesting to see. But it's a kind of lose-lose for Carney. That's the reality.
Lisa, I mean, I've heard a lot of people say, and we will be talking to a trade lawyer after this panel, that we will have to make concessions even to get an extension.
Maybe. But I got to tell you, if I'm Dominic LeBlanc or Janice Charette, I have been in Washington since August 3rd, literally at the table negotiating this. The last thing you want is a taco. The last thing you want is to have another extension, because what does that mean? Extend it to when? Another 90 days, another... The uncertainty for those companies that are going to be attacked by this Section 338 tariff is making problems now in terms of what they plan on doing. Are they going to wind up? How are they going to deal with their product going forward? Will people buy it in the United States with the promise of a 50% tariff? So there's no reprieve in having an extension, my humble opinion. It's almost like rip the Band-Aid off. And I'm glad Bob mentioned this. The retaliatory tariffs have to be proportional to what the 338 tariffs are without causing a death spiral to the Canadian economy itself. So I agree with Sherry. This is a real tough spot for the Prime Minister and his team. And who knows what Mr. Trump will do tonight? I mean, he hasn't had a great couple of days, has he? I mean, he's never really looked upon fondly, but it's been really bad the last couple of days, especially what he did to the CNN reporter and calling her out. So maybe he wants to look like the big strong man tonight and said, oh, those Canadians, you know, I told them where to go. I don't want anything that they have. We're going to punish them for being mean to us. That could equally happen.
Yeah, well, I think that he tends to beat up on us to show that he is in a position of strength. Yeah. Bob, so on the one hand, The theory is that for Carney, politically, a bad deal is worse than no deal. But for businesses, they need some certainty, even if it's bad.
The big problem here is there is no certainty. And there will be no certainty until he leaves public office. So we could get a deal tonight. And then he could decide 48 hours from now that I was mistaken. That's not a deal. So again, our best approach to this is to rag the puck, to do things as long as we can to support those industries that are being affected, to try to expand the markets in other areas. Aluminum is a great example of what can be done. And perhaps it was exceptional circumstances, but that's what we ought to be spending our time on, and doing things that we can do ourselves. Churchill yesterday is a perfect example of what we ought to be spending our time on. So, you know, I think we can't let ourselves get too wrapped up in what does Howard Lutnick say, or this or that or the next thing. Frankly, it's almost irrelevant. If we come up with something that's reasonable, we do it. If it's not reasonable, we don't.
Sherry, let's turn to these by-elections. And again, I don't want to get into the horse race so much as the cost. The cost is very large. And again, I mean, this has come up before, and regardless of what party is involved, I get really annoyed, unless there's clearly a health issue or something, that people run and then they get a better job within a year. I mean, I just think it's completely disrespectful of Canadian taxpayers.
Yes, I hear you. I'm not sure that that's absolutely the case. I mean, in Beaches, East York, with Nate Erskine-Smith, I mean, they're definitely not a meeting of minds there. And, you know, everyone has their story, right? But, I mean, you know, I think the greater question here is this. I know the honeymoon is still ongoing. It's raging, actually, in terms of polling for the Liberal Party. But I do think that what is most interesting about these by-elections is they're kind of a test. And they will be a test. And I think it's one that electors are happy to take, quite frankly. Certainly in Beaches, East York, which, you know, I know somewhat well, you know, I think, you know, people are thinking twice about how they voted. They're thinking twice about how they voted. And that's why, you know, these are kind of an opportunity as well. I hear you. I mean, yes, but I think these are an opportunity for voters to maybe do it differently.
Are always sending a message. But Lisa, what I hear from people is that the cost is becoming an issue of these by-elections. And again, I mean, whatever party it comes from, I just think it's completely disrespectful and running isn't that easy. If you run for, to become an MP or an MPP and then decide, gee, I got a better job or I'm going for a better job.
It's true. I always find that in the year after a government change, and I would say that Mark Carney was a government change, you know, from Justin Trudeau to Mark Carney, you'll oftentimes see a lot of people leaving and leaving for a better place. And we ran that gamut. Okay, so Wilkinson left, Blair left, everybody's gone on to a better place. And we now have those by-elections. And then you have the folks who are in opposition who are looking at, am I going to win again? And do I really want to stick around here in opposition? And do I have a better opportunity? And when does my pension come in? When's my 6 years? And you're going to get a bunch of those. And then the final ones are the ones that come in the last year, which is I've done 10 years here. I'm done. I'm going to jump before the election comes. So you're always going to have by-elections, and you're going to have them for a whole bunch of different reasons, depending upon where a person is in their state of mind.
Well, yeah, that before, Bob, you jump in, that whole issue of bringing the pensions in, that really makes voters crazy, Bob.
First of all, let's bring a little reality to this conversation. At 97%, by my calculation, of members of parliament are not running to the doors for by-elections. I think there's less than 10 members that are going for by-elections. So to kind of imply or suggest that there's this massive group of people running out the doors for by-election, it simply is not the case. 97% of those members are still the same. Two, it's been ever thus, to Lisa's point, after a change in government, some people realize, you know what? I was a big insider in the previous government, and I'm not an insider in this government. I've been serving 10 or 12 years. I'm late 40s, early 50s. I've got another career in me. I'm going to head out the door. I think that's perfectly acceptable for people to do. Libby, you and I have a different view on this, but I think a lot of people fit into that category. So there's lots of things that we can complain about members of parliament for. I don't think this is one of them.
Okay, I mean, I agree about having another career in you, but you know how old you are, and you can calculate with I ran for 4 years, and how old will I be then, and when is the time to quit? Anyway, moving right along, we had some very interesting developments last Friday. So there's this new requirement for cash bail. There's already a constitutional challenge on it. But, we keep having all these cases of suspects who are out on bail for very dangerous things that include gun crime. And it turns out last week, one of them shot a cop out on bail, Sherry.
Well, I mean, I think dangerous criminals can come from any class of society. I mean, the real objection to this, and it's mine as well, is that this is, one justice system for the wealthy. And we know that that's already, in fact, a part of it because of what kind of lawyer you can afford. But one justice system for the wealthy and one justice system for those who don't have the money. I mean, how many people have, a whole lot of cash on hand? There's not many now. And so you're saying basically that if you have a whole lot of cash on hand and you're a dangerous criminal, good on you. If you don't, sorry, you're going to jail. That's not a justice system, I think, that we want. We already have too much of that in the justice system, in my estimation, and we should have even less of it, not more of it.
Lisa, I mean, the government released a statement saying we'll never apologize for trying to keep dangerous criminals behind bars. And, I think that showing that they're getting tough on that, even if they end up losing a challenge, is probably good politics. What do you think?
That's it. You just nailed it. It is when you don't have an answer to a question, you provide a process. And that's what they've done. They've provided a process. I don't have the stats, maybe Bob does, but I would suggest that most people think that bail in this country works the way it works on television.
Yeah,
and you put up 10% and it's a bail bondsman and the fall guy gets involved and all this kind of stuff. I think most people don't have a clue how bail works. But one thing they do know, and the point has been made, that it's very easy for an individual to get bail. In fact, they're presumed to get bail as opposed to presumed to not get bail. And they see a lot of people talking about the revolving door. Right. You go in, you get bail, you go out, you commit another crime. So the government is saying, well, how do I make a point that we're trying to stop this? And they bring in this idea of money and people are going, but wait, aren't we already doing that? Isn't that how bail works already? I don't know if this helps them, Libby, is what I'm trying to say. I don't know if this helps them, but they felt they needed to do something. They've thrown up a process. Now everybody's confused and let the Supreme Court or whenever it ends up, where it finds its way. I don't know.
Well,
it's a conundrum for me why we would even go down this path, to be honest.
Bob, I mean, I think Lisa nailed it. Most people are shocked that there's no money involved in bail most of the time.
I think the bail question, it's a bigger question. It's people getting out after clearly committing crimes. If somebody has shot up a consulate, if somebody has shot up Jewish businesses and places of worship, they should not be out on the street. It's not a question of whether it's a $200,000 a bail or $5 million a bail. The answer is no, you shouldn't be out on bail. So I think that is question number one that needs to be answered. Two, and I feel for some of these judges, but they seem to be a little lax in terms of allowing people out. And I think part of it is because of the pressure that's on the justice system, where not enough money has been spent and not enough money has been invested in the last 10 to 15 years under two different governments in the province, and also to a certain extent, the federal government. So I think there's some things that government has to get organized. And it's not just a bail issue here, because at the end of the day, I think Sherry raises a good point. You do not want to have two-tier justice in this country, because that will lead to a whole other series of problems.
Yeah, well, I think you had a very good idea there. Make it dependent on the record of the suspect as opposed to the money. That might do something. We only have about a minute left, Sherry. Bike lanes are not a constitutional right. That came out on Friday afternoon very quickly. Your take on that?
They may not be, but they're a good thing and they save lives. So there you go.
I'm okay with that, Sherry. I'm okay. I'm happy that the principle that politicians make the law is the principle that won the day, but I'm okay with bike lanes too.
It depends where they are, where they make sense. Bob, you can have 20 seconds on bike lanes to wrap things up.
I like the smack that judge gave out to another judge. I thought it was entirely appropriate. And I like politicians, even recovering ones, make the rules, not judges. And I think that's a good thing.
Okay. On that note, we wrap things up. Thanks so much. We're all keeping our fingers crossed for something other than the worst result at midnight. Thank you so much, Lisa Raitt, Bob Richardson, and Sherry DeNovo.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Cheers. Okay, we're taking a break. When we come back, we're talking to a lawyer who is an expert on trade negotiations and all things related. And we'll see what he thinks about all of this and whether we are putting our heads in the sand when we return.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Oh, no. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Well, we've been talking about the politics of the tariff deadline, but what about the nuts and bolts? So what, if anything, is likely going on right now with just hours to the deadline? And if we take the worst case scenario that there's no deal and no reasonable extension even, what starts happening at 12:01? AM. So let me give the numbers out. 866-740-4740. That's our text line, long distance phone line, 416-360-0740. And now let's go to Barry Appleton, who is a managing partner of Appleton and Associates International Lawyers LP. He's one of North America's leading experts on trade law and investment treaty arbitration. He's also has a number of academic appointments, including at the Balsillie Legal Advisory Center at the Balsillie School of International Affairs. Barry, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here with you.
So what do you think is going on as we speak?
Well, look, the Prime Minister has said that this is both intense and very delicate. And I think that's a very nice, polite, and Canadian way to put it. This is not going to be an easy day, and it's not probably going to be an easy week. The United States wanted to put leverage on Canada. Canada wasn't doing what it wanted. What it wanted was to have Canada behave more like Mexico, have scheduled talks, give little gifts along the way. This is sort of like a virtual pinata. You hit the donkey, and all the goodies come out, and they wanted more goodies, and we weren't giving it to them. So there's more leverage to see if Canada will give goodies. If Canada doesn't give goodies, these tariffs are going to come in. They're going to come in because they give more leverage to the United States, not less. And there might even be more tariffs. So at the end of the day, first message to everybody is take a deep breath. Okay. The CUSMA agreement's still going to be there. Okay. It's just going to be a little bit worse. and then we're going to figure out where it all goes. Okay, so not a good day. It's like a big storm, but not the worst thing either.
Well, our political panel that I was just talking to, they're thinking there'll be some kind of extension, but wouldn't we have to give a concession even just to get an extension?
Okay, let's just make sure that everybody understands this. It used to be that we got free market access to the United States. We just walked across the border, were able to sell our stuff. We didn't have to pay anything for it, for most situations. Those days are over. Whether we like it or not, those days are over. So now what we want is what we put a premium on is certainty over free market access. So we need certainty because businesses can't plan without certainty. Investment won't come in without certainty. Canadians generally feel uneasy. We want certainty. So that's what we're going to pay for. It's not coming free. This is like getting an Uber in a blizzard. This is like going to get Taylor Swift tickets, or at the end of the day, it is just all the stuff you don't like. We are going to pay if we want to have some peace. And the question entirely is going to be, are we A, prepared to pay? B, are we prepared to take the costs of having these storms? And C, what would it look like for us if we actually let the CUSMA lapse? Those are the three questions.
Okay, but the level of the tariffs, it's punishing. I mean, people will go under. They can't afford to pay that much.
Libby, this is by design. Yeah. This is Donald Trump. Yeah. He is looking to extract. He is looking for as much as he can get. So anybody, all your listeners who think that we're going to get away for this for free, let me tell you, other countries have tried too. It's just not going to happen. There's going to be a price. And that price is probably higher today than it was when they made an offer to us last week that we rejected because we said that was too expensive.
Right. Let's get to the nuts and bolts then. If the worst happens at 1201, what exactly happens at 1201?
Okay. So there are 554 lines of the tariff code that are going to be affected. I read them all because they don't actually make sense. So I'll give you a good example. We put in a tariff on hockey sticks, but they stuck it into the alcohol tariff because they just had to throw it in somewhere. They picked businesses to create leverage on Canada. The way they did it is they found companies and entities that sold more than 50% of their total products to the United States, and then they pounded them. This is a leverage play. This is not about big ideas about how the world should look like. It is about how to extract more rent from your tenants. That is what the game is. So the goal is A, pay, or B, fight. And if you fight, you really have to move. And our problem is, for the last 15 years, we haven't done the things that we need to do in this country to be able to move. We needed more productivity. We needed more innovation. All the things that we would need to sell in other places, we haven't done. So the Americans think they got leverage on us, and they're using it. That's our problem.
Okay. We just saw a statement from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, because at the end of the day, it's the people buying the goods that pay the tariff. Mm-hmm. And they're saying this is going to be bad for our businesses as well. Trump's popularity has been dipping. But is it wishful thinking to think that that might make him back off a little?
Libby, I was one of two Canadians on the foundation board of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce for 14 years. Okay, I know how the U.S. Chamber of Commerce works. They are on the outs with the administration, not the ins. Those are the people, I love the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, don't get me wrong, but they're the people the administration's not listening to. And they're not listening to our traditional friends in Congress. And they're not listening to the governors. In fact, the president isn't listening to anybody in Congress. He's making tariffs where he doesn't have to go to Congress. That's why our strategy has to change. So, yes, at 1201, assuming there's going to be tariffs, okay, we are still going to be there. It's going to be hard for Canadians. It's going to be hard for law businesses. But we'll still figure it out. It's going to give us a moment where Canada finally has to decide, are we prepared to sort of grow up? and compete globally. Not because we say we have all the trade agreements, but do because we have the trade agreements. That's the difference. And doing is tough. And we've been doing the easy stuff. Now we have to do the tough stuff. So I don't like the way it's happening. None of us do. But that may be what the situation is. Or the alternative is the prime minister just says, look, I've had it. We're going to pay. That's what Trump wants. He wants to just say, what a pain. We're going to pay. And by the way, there's a lot of reasons to do that. Now, if you asked me what to do, I'd say sequence. Sequencing means that you actually pay something, but for something. So, for example, last year, we paid a huge price by getting rid of the digital services tax, the DST. Yeah. So we canceled that so we could have more talks with the Americans, and then we didn't have any. So that was a bad deal. So instead, what you do is you make a price and you put what's called a snapback. If they don't deliver, you go back to where you were. What we did is we killed the tax and we canceled the legislation in Parliament. So there was no going back. They got all the benefit and we paid all the price. So we need to think about it differently, but for sure, there's going to be a payment if you want to have an umbrella, or else we're all going to get wet.
Okay, well, again, so that example of the digital services tax, the Americans think we're easy marks, right?
Well, they don't have to think it. We were, right? Okay. If you think about it, we paid a huge price, billions of dollars about to be due, and we got nothing. Wouldn't you like to have a client like that? Would you want to sell that all the time? They think that we are easy. They think that we're vulnerable. So one of the options is not to be vulnerable, but there's a cost. Canadians have to be prepared. You know, my generation is prepared, I think, to pay. I think a certain segment of Canadian society is prepared to pay the price, but another segment might not. And that's what we're going to look at. There's going to be a lot of issues, and it's disproportionate where the effect is too. Not every province is hit the same way. So there's a lot of issues. It slices and dices in many different ways. I'm glad I'm not the prime minister or the trade minister today. Let's put it that way.
Okay. A couple more questions before we wrap things up. So the things that the Americans really want progress on, the government cannot deliver. They can't deliver on dairy a few weeks before an election in Quebec. That's like the holy grail. They can't deliver on booze in Ontario. And I think BC as well. So those are two of the main things that the Americans want.
You called it. So the way it works is this. If the provinces will agree, we can get a deal. But the provinces will only agree if we get comprehensive answers to the big problems like autos, steel, and lumber. Okay, lumber, 44 years of, it's not going to go away in 12 hours. So our problem is that we got to resequence it. If we want to pay to not have the tariff, there's got to be something linked to that that makes the Americans think there's going to be real progress. It's not taco. It's actually extractive, okay? We are the people who are going to pay. The question's going to be, are we going to pay by losing markets or are we going to pay by paying extortion? That's the choice.
Okay, so are you in favor of paying extortion? The other thing is, a deal is not necessarily a deal for Donald Trump. He doesn't respect deals.
Well, let's talk about that first. So snapback is the answer. Snapback automatically puts you back to where you were if he reneges. So it's not that in trade, in the world of trade, we don't trust anybody, but we put those provisions in. Canada was the trusting one. We are such Boy Scouts. We are so nice. We are like the Mounties and we salute. And at the end of the day, we didn't put a snapback last year, and we paid the price for being naive. I'm hoping we're not naive again, but it's going to be painful any way we deal with it. Either we're going to overpay, or we're going to get really wet, and then we may overpay again. That's the big decision for the prime minister, and the prime minister is going to have to make that with Trump negotiator-in-chief later today.
And so your prediction, just to wrap things up,
Bring an umbrella, put your seatbelt on. It's going to be super bumpy. I don't think this is going to be over. The president wants extraction. He wants trophies and crown jewels. What's he going to get? I can't tell you. But that's going to be the entirety of figuring this out. And Canadians are going to judge the prime minister, I think, on this. This is what we elected him for. This is the day. Let's see how it comes out. You know, it could be good. Might not be. We'll see.
We'll see. Okay, Barry Appleton, interesting conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. All right, people, we are taking another break. And when we come back, well, here's a very interesting and generous response to the huge increase in anti-Semitism that we have been experiencing. And that is a Toronto jeweler wants to give away up to 18,000 gold Jewish stars, Magen David, to anyone, Jewish or not, who promises to wear it openly. We'll talk to Jack Berkovitz when we return.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Well, a Toronto jewelry store owner wants Jews, Zionists, to be loud, proud, and unafraid, and he's offering a very expensive gift as an incentive. Jack Berkovitz of Omni Jewel Crafters is giving away up to 18,000 Star of David necklaces to anyone, Jew or Gentile, who commits to wearing them openly and proudly. And this comes after he also had some bad experiences with haters in the midst of the current alarming increase in anti-Semitism in our midst. So let me know what you think. You're going to take him up on his offer? 866-744-740. That's our text line, our long-distance phone line, 416-360-0740. And Jack joins me now. Hi there.
Hey, Libby, how are you?
I'm good, Jack. So how did you come up with this? What made you think of doing this?
Well, since October the 7th, 2023, that horrible Holocaust that was incurred in Israel, I've been called a baby killer six times. I step out every evening and look over my shoulder to see if somebody's following me. A few days ago, I was in Florida. I took a train and I was holding onto the railing, and a gentleman next to me was not holding onto the railing. So when the train took off, he was hurled to the ground. I picked him up. He brushed me away. I asked him to come and share the bar so that he won't fall again. And he said, I would never share anything with you. I've had myriad experiences. My partner, one of my partners in one of my businesses, went into the bank. Before he went into the bank, where he has a lot of money, he took his yarmulke off his head. And I said, why are you doing that? He says, well, I don't want them to know that I'm Jewish. I said, why? Well, it doesn't feel good when you have money and they see that you're Jewish. This is absurd. So 3 months ago, my wife and I flew to Israel for the sole purpose of finding a home in Jerusalem and leaving Canada, the home that I've called my home since 1960. And I said, I'm leaving. While I was there hunting for a home, I said, you know what? I'm not leaving. I'm staying where I belong, which is in Toronto. And I'm going to be the mayor of Toronto. So I announced on a large chat that I was running for mayor. And I got bombarded with, how can you do that? You're going to split the right-wing vote. You're going to hand the victory to Olivia Chow. And I thought about it, and I thought they might be right. So here I was without knowing where I should live, what I should do, how I should conduct my life. And I can't do nothing. So I said, you know what? I'm going to tell everybody we're staying in Toronto. And whether you like it or not, we're going to be very proud of our Jewishness. And so I announced to someone who announced to someone who announced to a writer at the National Post that Jack Berkovitz is giving away up to 18,000 Magen Davids, or Jewish stars, or Stars of David. And the rest is history. We are inundated. 18,000 will not do it. More than half of the requests are coming from Gentiles, not Jewish people. People are asking for 10, 20, 30 to give to everybody they know. Hamilton has asked me to sponsor them so that I give them tons of them so they could do the same thing in Hamilton. It's a tidal wave, Libby. It's a tidal wave. I couldn't be happier.
Are you? I'm okay. First of all, let me take a call from. Why can't I take this call? Joan in Mississauga. Now I can tell. Hi, Joan.
Hi there, Libby. How are you?
I'm fine. Are you going to take Jack up and take one of his Stars of David?
Yes, I sure am.
And what is making you do that?
I'm sorry, I didn't comment. What did you say?
Why are you doing that?
Because I would love to do that as part of the history of the Jewish religion. And Jeffrey is Jewish, and he's standing right beside me here. He would love to have one, too.
Okay, who's Jeffrey? Is a friend of yours?
Libby. Hello, Libby, this is Jeffrey.
Yeah, so your friend Joan is not Jewish?
She's not Jewish, but I'll tell you one thing, she is.
Okay.
She stands for Judaism like you wouldn't believe. And I was in the Six-Day War in 67. I was there in 73, Yom Kippur War. And at the same time, I'm a historian in aviation. I'm a guest speaker.
Okay. We're you can send your bio. Thanks for your call. So, Jack, again, this is kind of an expensive proposition for you, is it not?
Well, it's the least I could do. Thankfully, the world has been good to me. God has been good to me. Money is not an issue for me. I've never done anything for money. If I can bring 18,000 people to spread the word that we're proud to be Jews or proud to be Zionists or proud of Israel or support Israel, no amount of money could stand in the way of that. And as a matter of fact, yesterday, a lady walks into our store at the Lawrence Allen Center, which is our head office store, and she hands us an envelope. When she left, I opened the envelope and it was addressed to me. And there were four $1,000 money drafts in there. Two were made out to the IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, and two were made out to the Jewish National Fund. And she writes, I am not Jewish, but what you're doing requires for me to participate as well. Here's $4,000, and there's more if you want it. I mean, the outpouring of affection and love, and because, I mean, Libby, at the end of the day, we're all scared. Why are we scared? Because all we hear nonstop is how we're hated, we're despised. There's nothing in the world that is evil that we are not the cause of. And we're not seeing support from anyone. And we know it's there. We know it's there. So I'm telling people, be proud. Don't cower. That's what they want. That's exactly what they want. I won't let it happen. I just won't.
Well, interesting. I know people, some of them, their reaction is to wear a Jewish star loud and proud. And some of them cover it up, and some of them, it depends on where they're walking, because if you're walking in a place where you figure you might be attacked, that's a reasonable response.
Totally reasonable, totally understandable. And I'm just saying, those of you who want to show it off, let me make it easy for you. It's no charge. So originally, it was going to be just the Star of David. Then we said, you know what, we're throwing in the chain or whatever it is that we're going to give you to support that Star of David. And then we said, you know what? We're making it all free. And because there may be some screw-ups, if people are going to show up, it's not going to be ready, there's going to be some delays, we're giving everybody a $25 gift certificate to Omni Jewel Crafters as well, to be used for any purpose, any reason, anytime. We want this to be an experience where people say, wow, I want to be part of this. And that's exactly what's happening. We're getting calls from all over the world. Movie producer from Los Angeles spend the last hour on the phone with me. They're doing a movie about the Star of David. They want me to be in the movie. And I said, bring it on. I love it. I want to spread the word. I'm a proud Jew. I was born in Israel, came to Canada at the age of 7, made my fortune here, live here with my children and my grandchildren. And I'm not going anywhere because I'm being forced to go. When I go, it's because I choose to go. And not Carney, not anybody.
These are gold Stars of David.
These are base metal, stainless steel. They've got a retail value of approximately $50 to $80. With a chain, it's a little bit more than that. If it was gold, I'd be out of business.
Okay. Anything else? So, how do people get a hold of one?
Great question. So you could write. Well, the easiest way is to call the store phone number 416-783-7604. That's 416-783-7604. and you'll be prompted to leave a text message and we'll get right back to you.
Okay, and how many requests have you had so far?
We're zeroing in on 18,000, and that happened in less than a week.
Okay, wow. Do we have time for a quick call? I'm going to take a quick call, very quick call from Helen in Toronto. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Libby. I was at a Metro at Bathurst and Shepherd, and there were a number of boys there that were obviously religious. Some of them were wearing their religious garments, which are called tzitzit, on the outside, but no kippahs. I approached them, and I said, how can you be doing this? And they said, we are scared. We depends on where we are and what store we're in, whether we wear our kippahs and tzitzis out, or thinking that people wouldn't notice the tzitzis, we take the kippahs off. So there is a lot of fear, even in young kids going to school. These kids were in their teens.
Okay, thank you for that. Yes, and we hear about Jewish kids being assaulted in school. So again, Jack, what do you hope that this will accomplish?
It'll offset the strategy of those people behind all of this, and that is we will not be scared. We will not be intimidated. We are proud of who we are. We're going to announce it to the world. No more taking off your kippah because you're scared. No more taking off your Star of David because you're scared. It's not 1939. It's not Germany. This is Canada. This is my country. I'm not running, and I want everybody else to announce that they support the Jews, because what the Jews need is to feel that there are people out there who are with us. We need that desperately, because right now it doesn't look that way. And I refuse to accept that. I refuse to accept that our support is zero. Most people know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. But let's tell the world we're proud of who we are. We're proud of what we do. We're not cowering. They're not going to get to us.
Okay. On that note, we wrap things up. Jack Berkowitz, thanks so much.
Thank you, Libby. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay. That's all the time we have for today. Follow us on YouTube. Follow us on Instagram. I'll be back here tomorrow, and we'll talk then.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.